Welcome to Beach Grassroots, a monthly podcast highlighting nonprofits of the North Oregon and South Washington coastal region. This production is a collaboration with the Astoria Co-op's Change for Community program. You can learn more about Change for Community and the organizations it supports at astoria.coop. This month, we'll be speaking with Sea Turtles Forever, a nonprofit with a mission to protect and restore healthy environments. Their Blue Wave project uses filtration screens to remove microplastic debris from Oregon coast beaches.
I'm Mark Ward, co-founder and executive director of SeaTurtlesForever.org and lead investigator for our research projects in Costa Rica and Oregon.
I'm Austin Palmer, and I'm a filtration screen operator.
My name is Lindsay, and I am also a filter screen operator.
As executive director, I've been authorized by MINAI, which is Ministry of the Interior in Costa Rica, to run a research project on critically endangered marine turtles in Costa Rica, Punta Pargos. This involves directing an anti-poaching team and doing population studies and migratory research, egg success rates, and nesting productivity. So we've been working with endangered species there for 23 years now and run these anti-poaching teams, which are critical to securing sustainability for these endangered sea turtle species that are vital to the marine food web. In Oregon, we are running a different type of an operation. There are sea turtles in Oregon. There's four different species in Oregon, mostly offshore foraging. But our work in Costa Rica brought us to a holistic approach of sustainability for endangered marine turtles, which we had to cover all threats involved. And one of the major threats would be marine microplastics, because marine microplastics have become so ubiquitous in the ocean that all species are ingesting massive amounts, and millions of marine organisms are now dying because of ingesting marine microplastics, either directly or indirectly. I did a lot of research down there and was asked to work with a research project out of Tokyo University. I had already done a 10-year research survey on the most western point in Costa Rica, and with a team of a lot of college volunteers from around the world would come and work with us to survey an area of 1,000 meters on one of the most important foraging reefs for marine turtles at Punta Pargos, at Largatillo Reef. And we did a 10-year study there that gave us great insight into what kinds of marine plastics are in the ocean, what quantities of each particular item, ratios of, you know, how many bottles are there compared to straws and bags and shoes or whatever. And that study gave me great insight. And so I was a little bit ahead of the curve on marine plastic research. This is 20 years ago. And things have really ramped up in the last 10 years. But University of Tokyo asked me to help them with a study and collaborate with them on a microplastics research project. And so I did that and became, you know, very well informed about the threats of microplastics, which we see kill hundreds of turtles per year, if not, that we've seen, but probably more like thousands globally. And so I came back to Oregon, and we had not had a major problem with microplastics before this. And in about 2011, we realized, when I came back, that we are being inundated by massive amounts of marine microplastic on our North Oregon beaches. So I developed a system that could filter the microplastics out of the beach, because our beaches were becoming covered with this toxic material. And so we developed the system, and we developed a strategy. And after surveying most of the Oregon coast, actually from Long Beach, Washington to Port Orford, we realized that the amount of plastic was going to have to be remediated. We'd had to do something about it. We couldn't just idly watch as it built up and built up in our beaches. So we developed this filtration teams and a system that where we could filter beaches back to a pristine condition in a relatively reasonable amount of time and effort. It's not easy, but we can do it. That is kind of the base of what our organization does on the ground.
So it's a filtration screen. Like Mark said, it's not easy work at all. You have to put in a lot of hours out on the beach to get it like back to that pristine condition that everyone wants it at, and all the children on the beach can like go play in the sand without any harm with the microplastics being there. They're probably only about 8 feet by maybe 3 feet-ish. And you just load up the sand into the filtration screens, and then you just shake it back and forth, and you're just left with the plastics and then also the organic debris that's on the beach. So you have to pick through the organic debris because you don't want to take all the organic debris off the beach because it's there for a reason. And you just want to get rid of the microplastics. So then after that, you just put the microplastics in a bin, and then you take the bin off the beach and into the dumpster back to where the plastic should be and not on the beach.
So I'm currently a senior doing marine biology at the University of Hawaii Manoa. And I haven't personally done any projects yet with Sea Turtle Forever Foundation. I'll be starting here soon. But in classes, we definitely talk about microplastics and how it's in all of our foods going down to the fishes, and how it is a big issue and it's not talked about enough or researched enough. So I decided to get on this project, and I'm really excited to help make a difference in microplastics and, you know, sea turtles.
Austin, how deep in the sand are you finding the microplastics?
In the beach that we focused on, it was only about 2 inches, but this ranges based on the beaches that you're at. Some beaches you can go as far down as 5 inches, even deeper than that, because it just keeps stacking on top of each other if you don't keep cleaning it out.
How many pounds will go in one filtration screen of sand?
You put about, it depends on how like skilled you are. More of the skilled people put 70 in, but if not, you can go lighter with 50 pounds.
Projects that we've succeeded at are pretty incredible, actually. The first one that I'd want to mention would be right here in Astoria at Fort Stevens State Park, out by the observation tower in the estuarine area there that is actually an endangered species habitat. We have to stop working there in March because the snowy plover comes to nest. This was our 14th year working in there. We missed 1 year when Corps of Engineers came in to rebuild the jetty. And we actually went out and worked at Peter Iredale. We brought in, 1,400 people have worked with us there at that site. But when we went to that site originally 14 years ago, I was tipped off by Neil Main. He's a local biologist and a bird photographer. Guy's pretty well known, and he knew about the work we were doing right from the very beginning. And he told me I needed to go out there and see that site. So we went out, looked at the site in that estuarine area there at Fort Stevens, right by the mouth of the Columbia River. And it was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable, how much plastic was collecting in that estuarine area. We did a survey, and what we found was 5,000 grams, which is 10 pounds, of microplastic. And also that included some bottle caps, but mostly microplastics. Over 3,500 grams was just microplastic per square meter in that entire estuarine area around the rim at the high tide line, where the tide comes in and along the high tide line, 10 pounds of microplastic and small plastic per square meter, thousands of pounds in that site. We started bringing teams in there. We bring about 100, or on average, 100 volunteers a year, and we'd work in there. We'd pull out at least 1,000 pounds per year for 14 years. What that site has changed now because the Corps of Engineers came in and they rebuilt the jetty, which stopped the inflow of those microplastics that were coming right through the jetty and being pushed up with the tide into that estuarine area. Well, we went out there this year. We had about 75 people this year, and there was only 136 pounds left. So we have it cleaned up. You know, we pulled 6 tons of plastic debris and microplastics out of that site in the last 14 years. An amazing amount, but it'd still be there if we wouldn't have gone and cleaned it up. And now, this year, we had 75 people. We pulled 136 pounds and left that place, walked away, and it was relatively pristine again. That was a big success right here. The other really major project that was incredible in Costa Rica was our 10-year survey of marine plastics at Largatio Reef, which I mentioned earlier. And that is a very important foraging reef for marine turtles. It's a lobster fishery for the local free divers. And it's also a handline fishery area where they catch what they call pargo. And so there was a really important economical aspect to that reef. And it was being destroyed by plastics. We pulled, oh my gosh, thousands and thousands of pounds of plastic out of that site. Because it's the westernmost point in Costa Rica and a major current runs right past it, every year an incredible amount of monofilament line and plastics and bags and shoes, everything imaginable made out of plastic, came up on that reef. Tires, fishing nets. And we spent 10 years on that reef. I'd have students come from all over the world in college groups, and we stayed on it, and we cleaned that for 10 years. Well, what happened, a lot of the fishermen, actually the divers, were poachers because they're walking the beach all the time. That's their life. And they, if they saw a turtle nest, they'd take it. But then their other thing would be lobster diver fishermen. And they really disliked me. I mean, they hated me because I stopped the poaching. But over this 10 years period, they always wondered what we were doing out there on Largatio Reef. Well, after about 10 years of cleaning that reef of thousands and thousands of pounds of plastic and monofilament line and fishing nets and tires and everything, we totally restored that reef to a pristine condition. Well, the lobsters exploded. They had the biggest lobster season for 50 years after we got that reef clean. The fish exploded. They all came back. Turtles. We were picking up tagged turtles from the Galapagos Islands that were foraging there now. And it was an amazing reboot of that entire marine ecosystem because we removed all the plastic. Now, I came down there when the last year we were working, and here is a group of fishermen, because you have to walk through the fishing village to actually get to the reef. And I came down, and here's this group of fishermen standing there where all the boats are tied up. And I'm like, oh, no. You know, I'm like, oh, no, these guys are going to, like, yell at me and swear at me and stuff, and because of my anti-poaching work. And I came down, and I'm like, okay, well, I've dealt with this before. And I walked down, and one of the guys who knew me, Bernardo, he was like, Mark, in Spanish, but these guys want to talk to you. And I go, why? What? And I came down and they started walking up and shaking my hand and actually giving me hugs. And he was like, they want to know all about the work you're doing down here because the fishing has exploded. The lobsters exploded. The whole reef's come back to life. And that was a big success story. I put in 10 years on that. You know, 14 years here at Fort Stevens on that project, 10 years on that project, and both really great success stories of our work. And the other story would be Nikas Park. But Austin, can you tell us about Nikas Park?
Yeah, Nikas Park was a park, especially, I guess, big back in the day, like when Lewis and Clark was coming down.
especially Whale Park, because Nikas and Whale Park are right next to each other. There was a whale that swept up on the shore right there. And the whale, when Lewis and Clark came down, the Nikas tribe, they helped out Lewis and Clark significantly. And they just gave them a whole bunch of whale stuff, whale supplies. And it just helped them like survive down there. And like the reason we want to keep it clean, obviously it's because to keep the beaches clean, but it's also just to keep the historical significance of Nikas Park. Just, you got to remember, like, there's people that came before you, so you got to really just, like, support their land and just make the beaches clean.
Yeah, that is an important site that we're working at tomorrow.
Yeah.
Nikas Park. And it was historically for the Clatsop tribes, a trading site.
Yeah.
Where they processed salmon, processed whale meat on that occasion. And that could have been what saved the Lewis and Clark party, or a lot of them. They were starving that winter when they sent men to Nikas Park. And the Indians welcomed them with open arms and supplied them with food and got them through the winter. And so that's our first primary goal. Keep Nikas Park pristine. And Whale Park.
Yeah. Well, actually, the person who's not here right now, who's on the team, he wants to become a marine biologist when he becomes older. And he feels like...
Is that Zayden?
This is Zayden, yeah. Zayden wants to become a marine biologist. So he feels like this is like the first step into going out and really like helping the environment. Because he's told me many times that he loves what Mark's doing. And it's just being able to help out. It's like, I feel like it really makes him just feel better about himself.
Lindsay's starts work tomorrow on the project. She just showed up from Hawaii a couple days ago, but she's going to be a great asset to the team.
Yeah, as Mark said, I'm starting tomorrow, so unfortunately I haven't been able to make those memories yet, but I'm excited to. And yeah, we'll be out at Nikas Park. But yeah, kind of with marine biology at UH Manoa, you know, we kind of study not just... micro but macro, and that involves like environmental trades also with other countries, laws and all that, fishing for sure, study that a lot, fisheries, the impact it has on even the coral reefs and everything. So there's a lot of fishing, there's different types of fishing nets, and I really wish I could think of the name of it right now, but there's one that actually will rip up the coral reef when they're trying to catch all of the fish. And then they also have bio-catch, which also one of the bio-catches is as well sea turtles. And some nets are designed to push the sea turtles or bio-catch out, but a lot of them do not, and they'll still catch, and then they'll die, and then they'll just discard of it. And unfortunately, we're not keeping those numbers of bio-catch accurately, and so especially in those types of tug and fishing vessels. So we're just kind of trying to study different ways that we could also improve that with also having fishers being able to fish the amount they need, but also still preserving the coral reefs and the environment as well, so we can still thrive and have that booming of fish like they had previously. Yeah, like I said before, I just really don't think there's enough of an emphasis on microplastics or an awareness of microplastics and the impact it has, not just on our beaches, but everyday life and for everyone. So I really want to get involved and try to make people aware and try to make the environment back to its, you know, as close to pristine condition as I can. But yeah, and also I got actually introduced into this program by previous CEO, Mr. Johnson. He was actually my dad's high school teacher. So he actually heard about me going to University of Hawaii, Manoa, and about me being interested in microplastics, and reached out and told me about this program. And I said, I love it. Sign me up. Move me here. And I'm here now. And I'm super excited to start it.
Right on.
My connection with microplastics is obviously everyone talks about them all the time. It's like they know that microplastics are out there, but they don't really realize how much one like tiny little pieces of plastic, what it can do to you. And just especially recently, because for my high school, we had to do 50 hours of community service in order to graduate. So one of my buddies, he reached out to Mark because him and Mark had a connection. And ever since that, just like the first day that we met and we talked about it, it was just like they realized the big impact that microplastics are having on the whole world. So just going out there and having the ability to go help and like really at the end of the day, just be able to say that I helped make the world a better place is just such a great thing.
Man, you can keep going when you're down in Coos Bay going to college too.
Yeah.
Because they're buried under it down there too.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And we've been moving south. I've been setting up projects in Newport, Manzanita, Newport, Lincoln City, and we keep moving south. But you'll be down there in Coos Bay.
You can
easily get something
going down there. Yeah. It's a possibility.
I started all this because I really like being out in the wild. I've always liked being in the wild, and that sent me to Costa Rica. I was studying connectivity of ecosystems at Portland State, and I wanted to go be in the most diverse environment I could possibly be in, the most diverse ecosystem I could find, and that was Costa Rica, which is 5% of the Earth's biodiversity and 0.005% of the Earth's landmass. It's just massive amount of wildlife, and biodiversity is off the charts there. So I went there for a break and fell in love with it. Really wild. But that got me into turtles because I knew that those turtles are cornerstone species, absolutely vital to the marine ecosystem and the marine food web. When turtles eat, they supply food for the whole food web. Green turtles, just by digging up the seagrass, they graze like cattle in seagrass, and that releases nutrients that are locked in the seafloor. Those nutrients come up, and the entire marine food web ends up getting a burst of productivity and energy from those nutrient releases that the turtles create. That's just one aspect. Just one of many aspects of why sea turtles are important to the marine ecosystem. So I really like being out in the water with them too. They're incredible, as you know, and they're culturally significant to most native people. And so I just kind of fell into it. And then that headed me towards the microplastics because of the threat that that creates for long-term sustainability. And I, like I said, it might be the greatest threat. And, you know, I always realize we're not saving the ocean. We're not saving the world. But we are part of the solution. And I find great satisfaction in that, that I didn't just ignore it and go on with my life, try and make all the money I can or whatever, but actually can look back and say with great satisfaction that I was part of the solution and I did something. You know, what we're doing might be a small thing in the big picture, but it actually is locally pretty big. I mean, we've been keeping those beaches in Cannon Beach pristine for 14 years, every year down there, and Fort Stevens. And this, actually the system has spread globally. If you go on the website, there's a map of where I've helped set this system up at, all over the world. Mostly Europe, all over America, both coasts, Great Lakes, Gulf Coast, everywhere. Australia, a lot of Australia, Northern Europe. We haven't gone into Africa yet, or India, but also Hong Kong, Okinawa. I mean, it's amazing how impactful this project has been, even with our small team working, just trying to sustain Cannon Beach. It's spread globally incredibly fast, and thousands of people are out there doing this now for their beaches all over the world. All started here in Cannon Beach, Clatsop County, Fort Stevens. It all started right here, but it spread globally because it's such a great system and low cost. We operate at a very low cost. There is cost, but pennies on the dollar compared to other remediation, environmental remediation systems. And so I help people everywhere, you know, the best I can, and supply the screens at the lowest possible cost. So they can always get screens off the Sea Trolls Forever website.
We go through the work to clean the beaches, but if people keep using plastic, just like especially the ones that are just dispensable, like they just use it once and throw it away, we can do all the work to clean it, but if the ocean and the microplastics just keep repopulating, then a bigger impact isn't going to be there. So just try to limit your plastic use as much as possible.
I had a 12-year-old kid come work with us at Fort Stevens, and when he saw what was at Fort Stevens, he was in such shock, he went back to Portland, and it's a group called Portland Eco School Network. There's 5 schools. He went to his school. He actually got them to cancel single-use plastic in the lunchroom. Then it worked so well, they did it, that he went to the other 4 schools in the network and got them all to eliminate single-use plastic from the lunchrooms of 5 schools. This 12-year-old kid named Henry. We always need donations. And we always need funding. I mean, the more funding we have, the more work we can actually accomplish.
Even the tiniest things help out, too. It's like if you're just out on the beach and you see something that can be picked up, it takes 2 seconds to bend down and pick it up off the beach. So just any little things help, really.
Oh, I just always say, like, when you go to a beach, and everyone in Oahu says it too, like, leave it better than you found it. So if you can do that, then that's one step closer to, you know, making the environment a little bit better, a little cleaner.
You know, volunteers, we always need volunteers. If anybody listening to this wants to come check out what we really do, because it's actually pretty exciting. And it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely very satisfying when you run a filter screen and all of a sudden it's full of microplastic that just came out of the beach. Every screen is full of microplastic. I would like to kind of throw out a thank you to all the people that have supported us. I've just got to say how much I've appreciated the thousands of people that have come over 23 years and worked with the students, a lot of students and volunteers, and people like Austin and Lindsay, that they want to do something good for the earth. And that's why people show up with Sea Trolls Forever, is they care about the planet.
Thanks for listening to Beach Grass Roots, a monthly podcast highlighting nonprofits of the North Oregon and South Washington coastal region. You can find out more about the Sea Turtles Forever Blue Wave Project at seaturtlesforever.org. Beach Grass Roots is produced at the studios of KMUN in Astoria, Oregon, by me, Emily Horde. This production is a collaboration with the Astoria Co-op's Change for Community program. You can find out more about Change for Community and the organizations it supports at astoria.coop. Beach Grass Roots airs the second Thursday of every month on KMUN and can be found wherever you find podcasts. Find out how to listen to KMUN in your area at kmun.org.